Foster fuel. yeah, thank you, Sarah Foster, for the fuel.
Oh, we were recording. We did that. You went right into that.
All right.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks. This is a post-workout snack. I was really hungry during my last massage, and Foster Fuel came in the clutch because we sell it upstairs in our lobby.
So good. So good.
This coffee's really hot.
All right. Yo, everybody. Here is another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. Thank you for joining us. We're back in studio, man. Feels like it's been a long time since.
It's so cozy down here.
It is, dude. We get some people opening up down here, and mm-hmm. this is a session.
Yeah.
On the show today, we're going to talk about bicarb, kind of a trendy thing. So we're as Jared said, the people have answered.
The people have spoken.
Yeah. And they want bicarb.
They do.
So we're going to give our 2 cents on bicarb. We got old Zach Goulet.
Who knows very little about bicarb, but I'm very curious.
Curious guy.
Yeah.
Curious guy in the episode. And Jared, yeah. What's your last name again?
Bougay.
And Jared Bougay. Yeah.
Bougoat.
That's what they call me.
Bougoat on Instagram. But yeah, this is a interesting topic. I think people, it's obviously trendy. I think once Morton actually came out with an official product of it, genius on their part, because people were just taking old Arm and Hammer back in the day. Yeah.
What is bicarb?
Yeah.
What is it?
So let's get down to basics. If you didn't get that, that's a basic joke about...
Because it's a basic alkaline.
Yeah.
dorks.
Well, okay. So lactic acid is an acid, and bicarb is basic. So going back to high school chemistry.
Yeah. So in your blood, you have what they call the buffer zone, the buffer system that... when that lactic acid is produced immediately to kind of keep the pH of the blood neutral, the bicarbonate kind of sops up the hydrogen ions. So the acidic portion of the lactate. So
damn.
The lactic acid.
I know he's getting real Bill Nye on us.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So that's called acidosis. So metabolic acidosis, the metabolism of the body when we're metabolizing our carbohydrates, and especially during high intensity exercise, that's when we produce the most lactate. You do produce it at lower intensities and even at rest, but this conversation is really important for that 2 to 5 minute window. I think even up to 7 minutes, they say that window is the
optimal
window of bicarb
functioning.
You
mean like in terms of distance of performance?
Right, right.
So like if your event is covering that, but what about like, you know, I mean, obviously we know like Grant Fisher used it for a lot of his, you know, 5K world record or whatever, and that was like 12-ish minutes, so 12 and a half minutes. So it's like, obviously,
I mean, I feel like if you can get away with it for,
you know, probably like 7-8 minutes of that, we're not, you know, he's not really tapping into that system and needing it, but then obviously he has it there for the kick, per se. Which is why Morton sort of thought about it from a global perspective in running, because obviously at the end of each race, you're going to have some lactate.
Yeah.
Do you think 10K runners are taking it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Just to squeeze out that little window of time, more time that they have
just produced. For that kick, you know?
Yeah.
But the one question is like, is it too stressful in the system if you don't need it?
I think you could use it during your training. Like if you have a high VO2 max session, you know, if you're really trying to push the envelope on a workout, or, you know, you're trying to get the top end speed, you know, even in training, even 10K runners, even marathon runners have to, you know, go to the well sometimes.
But that's kind of my point is like in a marathon, do you want it in your system?
Well, I think.
Is it worth the biochemical hassle to deal with it versus, you know, an all out 2 mile where you're going to clearly kind of need it because you're just, it's like a, you know, different symptom, you know, different pain drive.
For sure.
Are you saying that like, with bicarb in your system in a marathon, the body has to use energy to...
Yeah, because it's resources to deal with the excess stress.
Yeah, I think that in a long-term recovery, like if you do a workout with bicarb as a marathon runner, you're going to recover faster because you're basically negating the effect of that lactic acid for that moment in time. You see what I'm saying? Like, but in training, but not so much in racing.
But isn't the effect of the lactic acid beneficial for training adaptation?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. So, you know, I would think.
I mean, it's like in a sense, you're callousing the enzymes that have to deal with it.
For a race for performance, that's where I would use the bicarb system, but not so much if that's the training adaptation you're trying to affect. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
Let's
just kind of take a step back because we're kind of heading in a tangent. So basically, the biggest thing is that, you know, obviously we're just neutralizing lactic acid. Historically, people have used baking soda, which was the Arm & Hammer joke earlier, which I did have a teammate in Malone that would do this. But I think, have you had any teammates in the past use it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. And I mean, even Clayton would talk about, like, he joked he never even used it too. You know, it was interesting. I had an interesting conversation with Nate Brennan, three-time Olympian in the 15 for Canada.
And so did I.
And he was like, yeah, I think it works. He's like, if you consider the trackflation, the increased speed at the top end and the depth of distance running of people running fast right now, I think it's just one of those things where, yeah, super shoes are kind of playing a role. The faster tracks are playing a role, but not enough of a role. There's another variable at hand here. And he thinks that, you know, bicarb is a real thing. So obviously people like Clayton have been successful without it, but other people like, you know, current people like Grant Fisher and Cooper and all them have used it and doing pretty well. So I think it just kind of depends on how you're utilizing it. Is enough evidence to showing that it probably is somewhat beneficial for certain distances.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like Clayton was always really good with round running, like got stronger and I don't feel like a lot of people up to now had that type of ability, and possibly bicarb and like what we know about, you know, carbohydrate intake in terms of like muscle repair, because you're instantaneously, I mean, more in like the high endurance stuff, but like we know that that stuff is like immediately going to recovery. So I feel like the bicarb for a lot of these 800 runners now, if we're talking 800 specifically, is helping them run rounds and run fast and
Strong. We'll get into dosing and we'll get into negative effects and all that sort of stuff. But as a general rule, if you're like basically 10K down, it's worth tinkering with. If you're 10K up, like running a half or a full, it's maybe marginal, if any, gains, and it's probably not worth the GI distress because that's one of the main side effects. But if you're 10K down, specifically 5K down, I think, you know, meta-analysis are showing like up to 2-3% gains potentially.
Yeah.
If it's performed correctly. So let's kind of get into that if it's performed correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anything about when to take it.
So I think
dosage and,
you know, if you kind of do a little bit of a review, like I think they're honing in on 0.3 grams per or 0.3 grams per kilogram of body weight.
Yes.
Which for 150 pound person, that's basically 20 grams. Okay. And you take it about an hour to 3 hours before. I think there's kind of some difference in terms of
90-ish minutes.
And I think there is the value of what Jared was mentioning earlier of like tinkering with it and training, because there's a sweet spot in terms of like when you're going to be able to utilize it versus the potential effects of it making its way through the GI tract too long to where it irritates the lower half, the lower portion of the GI or your large intestine. So you kind of want it to be like gastric small intestine, correct?
Yes.
Before it kind of makes its way to the large intestine. So if you wait maybe even farther up to 3 hours, it could almost be
through
and too far gone. But then again, if you have slow motility, so this is always something that you want to tinker with. So if you're wanting to know how to utilize this in training and or in racing, in training with your high-end workouts, like max VO2 type workouts, I would probably start at 60 and then slowly work your way back and just kind of see what changes you get. And then you probably are going to find like somewhere 60 minutes to 2 hours is probably the sweet spot.
Yeah. And
what did you do for your guard for the Guardian mile?
I did an hour out, 60 minutes. And so one of the things with these bicarb systems is that they also encapsulate the bicarbonate in like a sugar glycerol matrix. So basically it encapsulates the bicarb, the sodium bicarbonate, so that the stomach acid doesn't interact with the base. So that when an acid and a base react together, carbon dioxide forms gas, and that's where you get the GI distress. And so I think, you know, having that as a fuel source too. So it's tough to say like where the benefits come from. Is it the sugar? Is it the calories and the bicarb, or just the sugar? And so it's like, I think having both of those, you know, if you're going to take bicarb, to have both that sugar aspect with it, because that's going to fuel the body. That's going to fuel your ability to, you know, to perform. And especially if it's a high lactate producing activity, like a 1500, a mile, 2 mile, you know, that's where you're going to be using those carbohydrates the most. And the research shows that to absorb the bicarbonate, the sodium bicarbonate, taking it with a carbohydrate fuel source as well, it accelerates the absorption.
Does Morton add that into their product?
It does. That's what they brought to the table.
Oh, so it's like one stop shop.
Yeah. Well, they, because, you know, again, it used to just be like putting it in water.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever you would do for your normal fuel. But then, you know, they kind of came up with this like hydro carbohydrate system, basically this super saturated carbohydrate. And that's their gel, their hydrogel, in terms of the gel that you take for a marathon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they kind of took that same concept and created this glycerol matrix sort of thing to kind of help protect the bicarb. Mm-hmm. So it makes its way through.
Yeah.
So people were just running the risk back in the day with like taking baking soda and hoping that it would work. And
yeah, an early physiologist just literally looked at the math on it and was just trying to cancel out lactic acid. And
dude, how many blowouts do you think people had?
Like, dude, that's when they started ramping up porta potties for sure at races. Yeah, no question, dude. The 90s probably had some soiled drawers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, bicarb accidents, I'm sure. And that's kind of why I was joking about it with the half marathon and the marathon. It's like probably not worth the GI risk.
Yeah.
You know, the 2 minute porta pot stop at mile 8 is not worth it. Like for a 1% gain that you can get on your kick in the last portion of the race. And besides, who's even kicking?
Yeah.
Outside of the professional in a marathon or half marathon.
So it's not even an entertaining question to, like, you know, when we even like start looking at like ultra stuff. Obviously you're not going to take it for ultras, but do you think someone could tinker taking it like aid station to aid station? Like, would that have any effect?
The ultra scene is maybe a little bit different because say you're doing, like we did the rim to rim to rim, mm-hmm. where you are actually planning on for a portion of the run hammering.
Mm-hmm.
through like the uphill, and you know there's going to be, you're actually hammering as you are going to get a lot of lactic acid, but you know you're going to get a recovery on the back end. Maybe that could be okay, but then again, how will you respond, you know, a couple hours later? Like if you're continuing to run, is it worth, you know, that situation that you might be dealing with on the back half versus 1-2% gains that you might be getting on the uphills? I don't know. I'm sure people are going to tinker with it.
Oh, 100% they're going to tinker with it. It's headed that way.
So it's kind of interesting that you guys bring up the ultra conversation. I a little bit of research, they were saying the Tour de France riders, that they'll take bicarb before like a hard stage, like a hard uphill, mm-hmm. even though that's basically an ultra endurance of biking event, cycling event. But like going up a really steep incline, or like, you know, they're in a later stage of the race where they need to sprint and they need to pass people, they'll strategically place bicarb in that around those windows.
They're doing everything. It's like, yeah.
Well, I feel like that makes sense to me because they're not bouncing around.
Right.
You know, and they're not going to get the GI distress that you would in running.
Yeah.
Well, and the amount that they're ingesting too, their stomachs are like just steel.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the hidden traits and characteristics of a good cyclist is to be able to take in that much calories and process it.
Speaking of that, because I know part of that process, like talking about high carbohydrate intake, like the 120 grams to 150 grams an hour, that the way that it, or from what I've read and what I've listened to from other physiologists, is that truly the best and most effective way for it to be effective is that you have to be in good gut health.
Yeah.
Is that the same with bicarb to utilize
it? And that might be why some people get a benefit and others don't.
Yeah.
You know, like if the general public who's going in with, you know, leaky gut and just dysbiosis and just a bad situation in the gut versus a professional athlete who's very strict and with their diet and very precise with their diet, they might actually have a much better environment to handle the actual bicarb.
I think that's really
I don't know if that's been fleshed out. And I think that's one of the errors when you look at it, like a meta-analysis of what like professional athletes are doing and then working your way backwards.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you would never tell a high school kid to reproduce the workout of LeBron James because that's obviously totally missing all of the infrastructure that he's built over those decades of training. And so it's like, yeah, like it might be beneficial for people that are at a certain level, but is it beneficial for everyone?
Right.
So maybe you're not like physiologically even equipped enough to handle this, but this is what I like what Amanda Vestry said about, you know, in the Women's 6K podcast, how she was talking about like, dude, make sure all your ducks are in a row with the most basic things.
Like, yeah.
Make sure you're sleeping well. Make sure you're eating well. Make sure you're hydrated. Make sure you're doing the normal workouts. Like, and then if you want to tinker with these other variables like bicarb, well, this is not a magic bullet. Like this is maybe something that is the icing on the cake on a great infrastructure of a training regimen, but probably not a thing to stand alone on.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The work has to be done first. It's like, you know, you can wear super shoes, you can do all that kind of thing. But if you don't have the base, if you don't have the foundation, I should say, before, then, you know, it's like putting a cherry on top of just a plain ice cream cone. You don't have the thick part of it there. So, yeah. You know, I think it's interesting. We talk about gut health, and if, you know, over time, over, you know, a chronic use or a loading stage, you know, if you have, you know, low stomach acid, literally bicarb is neutralizing that stomach acid. So indefinitely encapsulating it with a gel matrix so that it goes into the small intestine and not stay in the stomach, because that high acidic environment is meant to break down proteins. And so, you know, when we talk about long-term repair and recovery, having a stomach acid around and that production is going to help with digestion of foods. And so if we're just constantly, barraging the system with bicarbonate, then you're literally neutralizing your ability to break down protein.
Yeah. And so that makes sense that you would not want to eat like a protein heavy meal like prior to an event, you know, which is going to be like a mile or 2 mile kind of all out sort of a time trial or race situation. Because again, you're going to tie up all those acids that are going to be, you know, dedicated towards breaking down the protein. So, you know, I think it maybe changes your pre-race fueling.
Yeah. I'm talking like, you know, after hours or, you know, if you're tinkering with this, like, you know, several times a day, which I wouldn't recommend that at all.
Well, there is the concept of bicarb loading though.
There is. Yeah.
So basically where you 3 to 7 days out, like, you know, for a marathon, you would obviously carb load. So we understand the concept of that. And then there's also now the concept of sodium loading. We're heading into a major event, especially in the summer, you'll load up on Element or some sodium intake, and just to kind of make sure your stores are topped off. Well, there's also the concept of, well, there's creatine loading as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. So you have like carbs, sodium and creatine are three common products that you can load heading into a major event. But I think some people also try bicarb loading, which I don't know. I mean, I think there's maybe some marginal excessive gains on that. Maybe that kind of gets you up to that 3%.
The dosage is a little bit less.
Yeah.
It's like 0.1 to 1 and 0.1 and a half to 0.2
instead of 0.3. Instead of
0.3.
So if you're 150 pound male or female, that would be like instead of 20 grams right before the race, like an hour or two before the race or event, that might look like a day, you know, 15-ish grams.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when do you add, like, when would you take that? Just like randomly in the day?
I actually don't know.
Well, I mean, if we think about it, like when our stomach is producing the most acid, it would probably be after a meal, like sometime in between eating food, so that stomach acid isn't being readily produced.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so take it with a meal?
Or after, in
or
between.
After, in between, your meals.
Yeah, once the bolus of food has kind of made it through the stomach. But yeah, so basically 0.3 grams per kilogram of body weight. So unfortunately for us Americans that work off pounds, we got to do a little math on that one. And then, you know, you get that idea of bicarb loading. So 3 to 7 days. And that might look like, you know, you might... So some of the articles I read actually said you can get up to 5.5 grams per kilogram of body weight per day.
Oh, wow.
But in each session, you might, like eating session, you might take 0.15 grams per kilogram of body weight. So meaning like after breakfast, you take a little bicarb. After lunch, you take a little bicarb and dinner, et cetera. And then those three add up to 0.5 grams per kilogram of body weight.
Okay. More microdose.
More microdosing, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you would still keep the same strategy the day of the actual race. This is if somebody really notices a benefit, like they are like all in on bicarb. They know it works, it's effective for them. Mm-hmm.
Very in tune with their body.
Yeah.
If I have a son or daughter running JV track, should I give them bicarb?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I think not even for the perspective of like, can it be beneficial for them? But I don't like having them rely on some external substance because it's a psychological thing. Going back to the Amanda comment, I think, you know, creating better habits and understanding and psychology of racing and performance that's healthy and not reliant on something else.
Mm-hmm.
I think builds deep, deep confidence. And then, you know, we all talk about Grant Fisher and it's like, right. But Grant Fisher spent decades getting his teeth kicked in with training and racing and training and racing. And he didn't just wake up to be the Grant Fisher he is now. So like, yeah, he can add in bicarb and give him that 1 to 2% gain. And it's like, it makes sense in that situation because he's literally chasing world records, chasing fastest human ever. And so, you know, in that situation, that makes more sense to me. But no, I just for the mental sanity of the kid, I think that's important to just not do things like that.
I agree.
Yeah. Real quick, I wanted
to... even high school kids. I mean, no, Cooper Lukenhaus, however you say his name, did it for the 800, and he was pretty vocal about that.
Right.
Yeah.
He's at that level though.
But he's there. You know, yeah, he's obviously there. Level. But you know, what's crazy about him though is 6 months ago he only ran 150 in the 800.
Oh wow.
Good training right there.
I did not know that.
So that is a meteoric rise.
Wow.
Blocked him upright.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to add in, you know, for us who deal in grams and pounds. So for like a 160 pound person, that's about 22 grams.
For the day of the race.
Yes. And then 180, that's 24 grams. And then for a 200 pound individual, that's 27 grams. So basically with every increase in 20 pounds, you're going up 2 to 3 grams of bicarb there.
What about like HIIT training or like CrossFit kind of stuff? Do we know if this has any effect on that?
Yeah, it does. high lactate with low rest. You know, you're really tapping into those, you know, carbohydrate stores, glycogen, glycolytic energy systems. So anytime you're utilizing those systems, having a bicarbonate buffer is going to help out with that. So it could be rowing or cycling or sprinting or, you know, any aerobic endurance sport or aerobic endurance from, like we talked about, time-wise.
Yeah.
But the research that I was looking at was with cycle sprint time performance, rowing and like 1500 meter time trial was kind of the wheelhouse we were talking about with bicarb here. So
yeah,
what a crazy thing.
But even up to like 12 to 15 minutes of performance. So
I wonder if it's going to like trickle in, or like how it would do trickling into like construction work, like a roofer taking shingles up to the roof, you know,
interesting.
Get a little bit more done. Right. Dude,
that could be
open up a whole nother avenue.
Dude, you're like, honey, I'm going to take some bicarb and cut down a tree in an hour.
It just hits the house.
Just zipping around the yard.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to, I mean, this stuff's crazy. If it can get into anything, it can get, I mean, literally.
Yeah. Use it for your local spike ball tournament.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you can get that extra 2 to 3%.
So what I wanted to talk one more thing that I think is interesting is, have you guys ever heard like the idea of the alkaline diet and
yeah,
why, you know, like cancers and tumors don't replicate well in an alkaline environment? Do you think like
what's an example of alkaline, like fruits, veggies?
Yes, I believe so.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's like has to do with like the raw material after you've, like, if you, it's like, it's fun, it's kind of a weird way of thinking of it, but if you think of food as like wood, and then when you burn it or you consume it, there's an ash that's left over.
Yeah.
Is the ash alkaline or acidic? And like meat, dairy, that kind of stuff tends to produce really acidic ash or aftermath.
Okay.
And then fruits and veggies are alkaline. Anyways, that's what an alkaline diet essentially is.
Okay. And then like the systemic disease development and being in an alkaline diet sort of negates that or helps mitigate those diseases from progressing. I mean, what do we think about like actually adding a small amount of bicarbonate into like your diet throughout the day?
Yeah.
To kind of not cure, but prevent or to manage reduce the chances.
That's a really interesting thought.
Yeah, that is a really interesting thought.
Yeah, but I think some 16-year-old kid that survives on like Cheez-Its is probably thinking about it differently.
Yeah, probably.
And they're like, oh, I could steal my Skittles and race well.
Nerd clusters.
But that's a really interesting point. I think, I think if you're in that situation of having like cancer or something like that,
do anything that could possibly help. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it can't harm it.
Just a food for thought, just an idea.
Yeah. But yeah, that's an interesting thought process. If you're going to try to really maximize your recovery in that instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zacharoni, got any other questions about bicarb?
No, I think
so. From what we told you today, is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I mean, I think it's a thumbs up depending on like who you are and what you're trying to do. And like, I think just going back with any of this stuff, you know, like we have all these cool gizmos, we have all these cool shoes and heart rate monitors and like all these apparel things. And then what we're finding is that like, it's marginal gains.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think that if you're at a level to where like you're fit, you got all your ducks in a row, you have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted. Yeah, do it. But
so back to your question earlier, let's move up to high school. Would you advise a high school kid to use it?
Not at all.
What about college kid?
And this is where I talked to Nate about this. I wouldn't and I do agree with him on this, and this is what I thought as well. I wouldn't do it for a freshman or a sophomore, but I would do like junior, senior.
Like say they popped and they're running pretty well and NCAA kind of thing. What about you, Jared? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I say it's a thumbs up. I'm one of those people that just likes to experiment. And, you know, it's like, I
would you have taken this in high school had you known?
Yes. 100%. Cause it's always that thing, that thought in the back of your mind. That's like, yes, but what if, you know, is like, you know, what if I would have done that? Like had that knowledge back then, you know, would have experimented with it. Like you experiment with it, you try it. And if it doesn't work well, then you just literally just didn't
move.
The needle didn't move in any direction. Like, you know, so I'm going to try it with marathon training. I've already tried it a couple of times and, you know, the results I've had, I mean, when I made my own formula, I felt like it actually had more of an effect than the company that I bought it from.
Jared's going to patent his own right here.
Right. The Bugoat bicarb, but like
Bugoat bicarb. I like
saw
that.
It in his Hyundai Kona.
Yeah.
Dude. I mean, it's gonna be like the ice cream truck at races, dude, just driving around.
Here, buy your gut bicarb here. But you know, I think a part of that was like, you know, I felt like I was hacking the system. So it was like, oh, I'm doing this and like I have my own thing and I'm gonna see if it works. And it was more of that than maybe actually the product. And who knows, maybe it did. I performed pretty well with it, but you know, I'd say if someone's trying to do it at home, like get a pack of Jello and then mix some sodium bicarbonate with it, and you've created your own hydrogel matrix, and there you go. Cheap, easy, and effective.
Crack the code.
You've always been gadget guy. Yeah. I'm not gadget guy.
Where do you stand on it?
I'd say, you know, the small percentage of elites or a small percentage of individuals that have maximized everything else, I think should utilize it. It's there for the offering. I think the individuals below that don't really need to be tinkering with it. They just need to create a better foundation of things. Me personally, I'm like kind of in between where you guys are at. I think like for me personally, like I'd like to tinker with it and just see if it works. And but I'm really good about like not letting things get hung up. So say I take it one time and it works. And then say don't take it another time, I'm not going to be like, oh, darn, I should have taken it. And all of a sudden I feel like I'm going to race worse because there was a world where I didn't know this stuff existed anyways, and I still would run well. So I think that I can really dissociate my mind pretty well based on what I'm doing. But in the end, for me, performance is not about what the end result is. Performance is like, can I look myself in the mirror and did I give it my all? And I feel like I can still do that without bicarb. And so that's the value to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, absolutely. I think the Grant Fishers of the world should utilize it. I think people at that level, I think people that have built up to that level, say, even if you're a master's runner, you know, if you want to run fast on the track and you're trying to run a 15 or a 3K fast on the track and you've trained hard and this is your A race, well, tinker with it heading into that. I mean, I don't think there's any harm with that. But, you know, the younger individuals that don't have that decade worth infrastructure of development and psychology of racing and performance probably shouldn't get hung up on it.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's good. That's a good take too. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, any final tidbits there, Bill Nye?
Bicarb Bill?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple more things, but like, you know, bicarbonate is an extracellular, meaning outside of the cell in the blood buffer system. You also have an intracellular inside the cell buffer system, which, you know, if we're talking how we can pair things together to make a synergistic effect, adding a beta alanine as sort of a, you know, another thing here that.
Dude, in 2 years, everybody's going to be doing beta alanine now.
getting itchy faces. And
we'll have a beta alanine episode
in 2027.
So then that forms carnosine. So a precursor to carnosine, and carnosine is your intracellular buffer system. So the idea is if you were to take both, and that would cover both inside the cell and outside the cell as well. So, and just
but then it's going to turn your gut inside and out.
That's right.
Yeah. And your shorts scattered and splattered.
While you're itching your face too.
Yeah. He's like, I PR'd, but my thumb's twice the size. It's like I'm going through an allergenic response.
But I ran fast.
My lips are swollen. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to another great episode. And, you know, let us know your thoughts on this. But overall, just kind of a meh response to this. But I think it's important for people to sort of tinker with this on their own and, you know, kind of take this information and kind of run with it. But if you have any other questions or concerns, reach out to us and we'll try to cover in some of the future topics and episodes on this. But you know us, we're always trying to stay up on research and, you know, what the industry is saying. And so I think this was a good kind of up-to-date, fun episode on bicarb.
Keep training.
Yeah. Thank you. Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries. So again, Running Rehab.